Welcome to a podcast of The Mike Novak Show. You can listen to Mike live Sunday mornings from 9 to 11 Central on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM.
America's heartland grows crops to feed the world, but we often forget to acknowledge those who bring us this bountiful harvest year after year. Biotech companies.
Biotech companies are revolutionizing farming.
Really?
Yes. They are helping to put more food on tables throughout the world.
For instance, biotech giant Monsanto makes patented genetically modified seeds that resist highly toxic weed killers, which they also happen to make. But now, their time-honored way of life is under attack.
Sometimes farmers act in a manner that's not in the best interests of the biotechnology seed companies.
Yes, Big Pharma has forced Monsanto to pursue legal action against them over 500 times a year.
Monsanto's lawyers are accusing farmers of violating their patents, regardless of whether they're doing it or not.
Maybe the farmers deserve it.
That's not true.
But come on, these seeds are patented.
In one case I'm aware of, Percy Smizer, trucks driving by his farm on the way to the elevator, the seeds blew off the truck and into his field. He was sued by Monsanto.
Maybe he shouldn't have built his farm downwind.
That's ridiculous. It costs hundreds of thousands of dollars to defend against a patent infringement lawsuit. They basically force us all to fall into line with their rules.
Do you know how hard it is to develop seeds? It's not like they grow on trees.
All Monsanto asks is that greedy farmers pay a yearly licensing fee for new seeds, rather than reuse seeds from a previous harvest, the way they've done since farming began.
Monsanto's lawyers are professionals. This is all they do, is sue farmers. That's how they've gained a 93% market share.
They have a 93% market share?
93%.
You have to do a lot of suing to get that kind of market share. I mean, this is backbreaking work they're doing. What are you doing?
Growing food.
Big deal. Any hipster can grow food. You can grow tomatoes on a Williamsburg rooftop. It doesn't take a lot of skill.
Live from the beautiful Showcase Studios on North Milwaukee Avenue in Chicago, in between Andy's Deli and Lido Banquets, and just a punch key's throw away from the Polish capital of the Western Hemisphere. It's The Mike Novak Show, Chicago's only locally broadcast deep green gardening and environment program. Heard every Sunday right here on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM.
Good planets are hard to find. Temperate zones and tropic climes. True currents and thriving seas. Wind blowing through breathing trees. Strong ozone and safe sunshine. Well, good planets are hard to find. Good planets are in demand.
This hour of the Mike Novak Show is brought to you by The Care of Trees, a Davey company. Their business is people and their love for trees. And by Recycled Granite, featuring eco-friendly split stone veneers and handmade products by individuals with disabilities. Go to recycledgranite.com. And by Birchold's Floral Gift and Garden Center. Get green, let's get growing. If Mike says he's growing a pear, he's literally growing a pear. What did you think he meant? Get your minds out of the irrigation ditch. Here he is, Mike Novak.
And look who we have in the studio. I believe it's a Rob Carthol sighting.
Hi, everybody.
Hey, wait a second.
Good morning. I almost forgot what you look like.
Yeah, thanks.
I was trying to forget what he looked like.
No.
Aww.
That cute smile.
You know,
the beard's hiding.
That beard, you look like our guest today, our first guest, Albert Bates, who's going to be on the program. And if you go to my website, you'll see a photo of him. But Rob, you're kind of, are you growing that out for the apocalypse and, you know, the ultimate meltdown of society? We had a preview of it this week in Congress, you realize.
Of the apocalypse?
Yeah. Kind of look, Blake Davis has been on the show.
Mm-hmm.
We've talked about this, the survival plan. For the 50-year survival plan for climate change and for congressional dysfunction as well. And you think I'm kidding, but it all plays into that. And our first guest today, who's the director of the Global Village Institute for Appropriate Technology, he's a resident of The Farm. in Summertown, Tennessee. He's going to be a keynote speaker at the Great Lakes Bioneer Chicago on the 2nd of November. And he's going to talk about that. If you go to my website, MikeNovak.net, go to this week's show and scroll down just a little bit, there's a page from the Global Village Institute for Appropriate Technology. And it's called the Toolkit. And it has the kinds of things that we talked about with Blake Davis. How to grow your own food, how to make power, how to make stuff, clothes. Because there are people who believe in more and more, I'm on their team. In fact, I want them on my team. That this is all going. This is all a house of cards right now, and so it's very, very interesting stuff. And so we're going to start the show with him today. Rick DeMaio weather 9:45. Then in the second hour, believe it or not, in the midst of all this dysfunction in Washington D.C., there's such a thing called the Farm Bill that has been held up for a year. It's still a year, and they've been sort of bumping it along and pushing it along and saying, well, let's go with parts of the old one. And then when they did that, that was really bad news. And now, guess what? The House and the Senate are getting back to talk about the Farm Bill and also something called the Food Safety Modernization Act. Now, doesn't that sound benign to you? Doesn't that sound like a good thing, Food Safety Modernization Act?
Why do I feel like this is like a Citizens United?
Yeah, you should feel that way. It's going to do things. If it passes the, you know, when we get the FDA involved in growing our food, bad things can happen. You know, this is one of those times when I look at all the Tea Partiers who say, oh, big government's bad. And they say it incessantly and until you just want to scream. But in this case, it may be that the FDA should not have its dirty little paws in our food processing. So Wes King, who's the executive director of the Illinois Stewardship Alliance, will be here. He's been here before to talk about the Farm Bill as it bumps and grinds along. Bumps and grinds. There's a metaphor for you or an image. And then finally, Dan Krug from the Care of Trees. The Care of Trees are a great sponsor of the Mike Novak Show. We're talking soil care as we get into the fall, in the middle of the fall and lurch towards winter. He'll be talking about Davies because the Care of Trees, of course, is owned by Davy Tree Experts. And we'll be talking about Davy's Soil Care and Arbor Green Pro fertilization efforts, process, product. That's all coming up on the show today. I'll tell you what, wait, 2 seconds before you get a hold of Albert.
Yes.
You've been leading a pretty interesting life.
Oh, yeah.
You haven't been around here.
No, it's been, I've been doing some disaster relief. And
what do you mean? What kind of disaster relief?
Well, I was out in Colorado and I was really relieved when the disaster was over.
Well,
I don't think that's what they well,
you know,
mean
and wait. We've got to where is it?
That's a whole different meaning. But bump.
Thank you. I had to find that first. I'm not like Norman Goldman. I don't have the little machinery. He just punches the button here. I got to call everything up on the computer. Yeah, you were in that rainstorm. Boy, good timing, dude.
Oh, yeah. It was not what I was planning on doing when I went out there. But, you know, you just do stuff. You wing it.
You weren't in any danger, were you?
No, I was fine. I know plenty of people out there who, you know, who lost quite a bit. Everyone that I know is healthy and safe, but a lot of people, you know, people lost homes. It was a big amount of rain that came down.
Oh yeah, we talked about it at length on the show with Rick DeMaio.
Yeah, and I was in a soggy tent waiting for it to all.
Oh my gosh, you were
over.
In a tent. Oh my goodness!
Yeah, it was fun. It was really fun. I might Yikes. Still sound a little hoarse, but
How waterproof was
it? And that's right. You got a little bit
sick afterwards.
Sick after that. Yeah.
It was cool. The tent was not at all waterproof. It was raining inside my tent, but
wow,
it was cool.
You're lucky you survived this thing.
Yeah. It was a thrill a minute out there. But since I've been back, I've been working pretty full time on a lot of different studio stuff.
You should know that in his other life, Rob is a carpenter.
Carpenter and all sorts of things.
And you've been working on some showbiz stuff. You got some TV shows?
Yeah, I can't, disclose because I signed some things. But I've been on a spaceship.
You've sold out to the man, haven't you? Totally sold out.
There's going to be a spaceship on TV, and I'm not supposed to talk about it. But if you were to suppose that anybody who has already been very famous for depicting an FBI agent on television, and that this person was going to be in another TV show.
Wow. Okay.
It would not be a surprise to suppose that there might be a spaceship.
Mm.
So that's cool.
Wow.
Spaceships are cool.
See, you heard it here first on the Mike Novak Show.
We heard nothing at all.
Well, that's cool. Speaking of, we should get Albert on the phone there, Rob. I'm glad you're alive. I'm glad you're here. Thank you so much. Now, speaking of brushes with fame, our very own Lisa Albrecht here in the studio. I posted about this on Facebook, but tell us what happened this week.
Well, so on Wednesday, I got a phone call from the Solar Foundation, which is a group out of D.C. I have been working with them a little bit on a high-profile building. That was all I was allowed to say, was that it was a high-profile building in Hyde Park. And I got a phone call on Wednesday late afternoon to say, hey, are you free at 4 o'clock? Reverend Jesse Jackson is launching something called the Solar Faith Initiative, and we'll be doing an hour-long television segment regarding solar energy, climate change, and the responsibility of faith-based organizations.
Mm-hmm.
So I did clear my calendar. I was really nervous because I didn't know if I had the skill set to do this. So I nearly said no.
What?
I nearly said no.
Are you insane?
Well, because to me, the message was more important than the messenger. And so I really felt intimidated whether or not I could. I thought I would be totally starstruck and that I wouldn't have a voice, that I wouldn't have logic. But there is something but then I woke up and realized I will never get this opportunity again in my life. And that I possibly might have the communication skills to deliver what I, my mission in life, which is clean energy. And so we got to the studio,
And the name of the program again?
It's on the Word Network. It'll broadcast next Saturday at 9 p.m. Eastern, so 8 p.m.
Where's
here.
The Word Network?
It's a web-based television. I think it is on cable as well, but I don't know what the network is. So there's 40 million viewers worldwide.
Holy smoke.
Yeah, a little intimidating. So I did the first thing that most women would do. I went and shopped. I got a new dress because I can't go to, I can't go to Rainbow Push in jeans, which is my normal work clothes. But so I got there and everyone was just lovely. I felt so at home. I felt so comfortable. Reverend Janet Wilson is really his right-hand person, and all of his staff is just so nice. And then he was just lovely. There, I wasn't nervous in the least little bit. He warmly embraces you, gives you a hug, and shakes your hand, and is just a very warm, genuine person.
And by the way, if anybody's listening and they can send us, do some research and find out where it's on cable in this area.
It's the Word Network.
Be the Reverend Jesse Jackson senior show or something
I don't know. They didn't give us the name of the show. That's funny. I should, maybe it's on some literature that it was handed but didn't read. Yeah. But so the entire segment, it was Brad Klein from the Environmental Law and Policy Center, Nick Hyland from the Midwest Renewable Energy Association, Andrea Leckie from Solar Foundation, and myself and the Reverend Jackson. And it's just a four-person roundtable where he interviews us about the importance of clean energy. We talked about the cost affordableness of it. And he is challenging 10,000 churches across the country to incorporate renewable energy and energy efficiency programs within their congregations, recognizing that it is a stewardship require, you know, it's part of our jobs as people on this planet to care for it. Mm-hmm. And so he has laid down the gauntlet, an interfaith approach, where they are really looking for churches to lead the way and to help their congregations to better understand the value of renewables, and most importantly, energy efficiency.
That makes total sense. And I've done the same thing at talks when I go out to garden clubs and other places. And I throw down the gauntlet in terms of growing food, mm-hmm. because congregations are the place to do it. What do they have? They have land. They have people. They often have kitchens that are underused.
Yes.
Underutilized, and this is the perfect place. I mean, KAM Isaiah Israel on the south side with Robert Neville and his folks are the perfect example of mm-hmm. how that works and how they have spread that gospel, so right. to speak. And yeah, now to throw in renewable energy into the mix, what if all of our congregations in the country started getting on board with these issues?
Right, exactly. And I think there's so much power and force behind what can happen from that. You know, and again, keeping in mind that this message is an international message. And so, you know, not only does, you know, renewables help to, you know, reduce the carbon and hopefully have a positive impact on the climate, but also in third world nations where the availability of power limits knowledge and experience, information, you can bring renewables in without needing a huge infrastructure. So it was just a really exciting opportunity. I then could not believe, but I got a personal invitation from him to join him for dinner. So I got to sit at dinner with three of his people, and Andrea and I got to go to dinner with Reverend Jackson.
Ooh.
I just couldn't believe it. He could not have been nicer. He treated me as though he knew me for a lifetime.
He recognizes talent when he sees it.
Oh, thank you. But he was just so down to earth. He left last night for Nigeria, which is why everything was just such a fast push. But it was just an honor to be, you know, you may disagree with his policies, his tactics, whatever, but you cannot fault the man for stepping out into a bigger life than his own and pushing for what he believes in and working towards civil justice.
Well, congratulations. I'm glad you're part of that message, and I'm glad that you were able to bring the... again, the gospel, as you say, with the gospel of solar.
We'll see what they do with the editing.
Okay. It's the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk. I am not worthy of having Lisa Albrecht on the program here or even Rob Carthol. But let's go to the phone lines right now and bring in our first guest today, and that's Albert Bates. He's a biologist. You're a lawyer. And an educator and an author. I was glancing at something up on my sheet here. You might be a biologist. I don't know, Albert, but I doubt that you are. Are you?
Well, I'm a recovering attorney, but biology was one of the areas that I'm most interested in and am doing probably the most today.
And, of course, permaculturist. You're director of the Global Village Institute for Appropriate Technology. And I have to admit, I just like the idea of appropriate technology. How would you define that?
Well, you could use it in both senses of the word. It's appropriate in the sense that it's not too big, not too small, just right in the middle. But you could also say we're appropriating the technologies that are ethical and reasonable and inexpensive and accessible to most people from corporations, governments, and others who would tend to take them in the wrong directions.
You've been involved with so many things for so long, and you're coming to Chicago for the 2nd of November and the Great Lakes Bioneer Chicago Conference. Last week we had Sandra Steingraber on. This week you and your keynote is the 2nd of November, Saturday morning, I believe at 9:30, is that correct?
That's right, yeah.
Yeah, and of course at Roosevelt University. And your talk is going to be COOL, an eco-village responses to climate change. You know, before you got on the air today, I was talking a little bit about, and you and I actually have chatted a little bit ahead of time about Blake Davis from IIT, who you said you know, and he's been on this program, and he works with The Plant on the south side of Chicago. And he had the 50-year survival plan for climate change and talked about it on our show. And then, of course, the government shutdown happened in the last few weeks, and we came close to defaulting. And it occurred to me, this is all part of that plan, accidentally in some ways. But this is how it's a prime example of how our politics and our government is fraying at the seams and breaking down. So in your case, you want to be ready for that if it gets extreme, correct?
Yeah, I actually wrote a book about 2006 called The Post-Petroleum Survival Guide, and it was also the survival guide and cookbook. So my idea was to provide recipes that could get people together around in neighborhoods to have talks about the things that needed to happen.
I think, yeah, and so you beat Blake Davis to the punch by about 7 years. What? Because it's interesting that your blog is what? It's called Peak Surfer, and I've got a link to it on my website, MikeNovak.net. You can go there. But I assume that
the blog is called The Great Change.
Oh.
The idea being that the what's about to happen, people look at it as a sort of a horrible end times kind of game where we're playing out all of these catastrophes simultaneously. But in actuality, what's about to happen could be very good. It could be something that's needed to happen for a very long time. And what happens on the far side of that could be better than what we have right now.
Wow, I'm glad you're optimistic about that. I'm a little frightened by it right now. Because, all right, let's go to that. And I apologize. You're right. It's called The Great Change. Although if you the URL I have is peakserver.blogspot.com. Is that correct?
That's correct. And the idea is that we're at the peak of everything right now, peak of resources, peak of extraction, peak of wars, peak of, you know, you name it. And we're surfing through these times. So it's kind of like peak surfing the peak, right? We're at the top of the wave. And looking out ahead, what we see is nothing but down.
Well, I assume
a thrilling ride.
Yeah, I assume it also refers to peak oil.
It does.
Which we, you know, have we hit that point?
We have. We hit it a few years back, and, you know, we're into what they call unconventional liquids right now, which is a way of saying fracking with a euphemistic tone.
Mm-hmm.
But it essentially is prolonging this plateau, the peak of the wave. We're surfing along at the foamy top using unconventional techniques like fracking, but that's not going to last out this decade. We'll be seeing the end of that fairly soon.
And tar sands. Tar sands oil is also part of that.
Well, tar sands, and they're talking about the kerogens that might come out of early uncooked oil deposits and things like that. Well, all of those are much more expensive to produce, and in fact may not even be economical to produce. Shell Oil just canceled its entire $1 billion kerogen research program because they just decided this is never going to be economical to produce.
And at the same time this week, folks who've been paying attention to the news note that we have found that there are piles of pet coke in the Chicago area. First, they were noise and news in Detroit when they were blowing across the river and creating clouds of pet coke. Now it's in Chicago, thanks to the BP refinery mm-hmm. in Whiting, Indiana, which is upgrading and will be producing even more of that stuff. In some ways, Albert, you can see all this happening at once. It's almost like a train wreck in slow motion.
But my friend Colin Campbell compares it to going into the bar and it's closing hour and they've already had last rounds. so you can't get anything to drink. So you start cutting up the carpet and squeezing it into a glass to see if you get the last little bit.
I gotta say, that's not an experience I've had at Last Call.
Eat for yourself.
My question to you, Albert, is you've worked in what a lot of folks, and forgive me for saying this, would call alternative technologies. You live an alternative lifestyle. This is not the norm. What you do is not the norm for the United States of America and perhaps even the world. You might correct me on that one, but certainly this country. How do you get more people to understand the importance of your work and moving past this peak and to something, to a brighter future?
Well, it's a little tricky. For me, I had to go through quite a heavy cultural shift back in the early 70s when I left my promising legal career in New York City and joined a hippie commune in Tennessee and just, you know, embarrassed my parents terribly and looked like it was a lot of money down the drain. But, you know, I became an environmental attorney working out of the community, the farm in Tennessee. And for 20 years, I was fighting against bad guys, nuclear power plants and chemical industries. I actually got involved with this one chemical company that was fracking back in the early 1980s. They were injecting all of their toxins, so it was reverse fracking. Instead of getting things out of the ground, they were pumping things in, and they were putting all of the wastes from pesticides and herbicides into the ground. And in the process, I had to argue, you know, Tennessee may have a lot of surface water, but we need that water that's deep down there. We need to protect those aquifers. And so my principal arguments were the population is growing and climate is changing. So I had to go into court back in the 1980s and tell a Tennessee judge that climate was going to be a game changer. I had to bring in experts. Al Gore was very helpful dredging the Congress and the agencies to give me lots of facts to use. And eventually I scared myself. I got totally frightened of climate change. Mm-hmm. And I got to the point where I put all that into a book. It was called Climate in Crisis. I wrote that around 1985. It got published finally in 1990. And from that, I left the practice of law because I had just been so shaken by this experience, worried about tipping points, worried about peak everything, worried about the direction that civilization was headed. And it's like we were like having a Thelma and Louise moment.
Yeah.
And once you're in midair, you don't really have a lot of options. So I had to, reassess my life, and I became a farmer. I became a mushroom grower. I actually ran a business selling shiitake spawn and things. But then as I got farther along, I started realizing, you know, actually communities can change and shift the way that they look at what's prosperity, redefine prosperity, redefine what's really good in your life. What makes your life good? And so this came around to the idea of eco-villages, and I started being involved with the Eco-Village Network of the Americas and then the Global Eco-Village Network. And lately I've kind of improved on that idea, which is to talk about cool villages or e-cool villages, villages that net sequester carbon while they're having a good time.
You know, one of the things that you mention and something that I've been interested in, I really haven't done a show on it yet, and it's about time, is biochar. In mm-hmm. fact, your last book was called The Biochar Solution, which came out in 2010. In 25 words or fewer, tell us about biochar.
I learned about this when I was going to a conference on permaculture in Brazil. And they had the dark earths of the Amazon, which is kind of this mysterious fact of life down there, which is that you have tropical soils, and they for some reason, there are patches in Brazil which are extremely fertile, which couldn't be explained for a very long time why they could have large civilizations in pre-Columbian times in such a tropically depleted area, soil depletion. And then it turned out that those soils were man-made, and the secret factor, the key ingredient, was charcoal, that they had for thousands of years been putting charcoal into their soil. And, I would distinguish what biochar is, and to say that Charcoal might come from a hardware store or a grocery store to put into your charcoal grill, but it probably has some petroleum additive so that it burns quickly. And instead, what you want is something that you want to put in your garden. So you want a clean charcoal, and that's what we call biochar. It's suitable for putting in your garden. And it makes the soil richer. It makes it more fertile. It makes it a home for all the microorganisms that help your plants grow.
And I've heard it talked about at a number of conferences here, horticultural conferences, as something that is the future, something we really need to be looking forward to and to utilizing. I've heard people talk about, for instance, like trees and tree pits in the city, put biochar around it, and then they might actually have a chance.
Yeah, and it's really a paradigm shift in agriculture or horticulture, because you're not talking about chemistry here. We're not talking about adding nitrogen and phosphorus and so forth and making a plant grow. We're talking about adding biology. And what charcoal does is it provides a home for the bacteria and the fungi and the microarthropods that translate nutrients from minerals in the soil into something that the plant can eat. And the charcoal provides them a coral reef effect. It's air space, it's water, it's the ability to have a healthy biological community that really makes a plant grow.
I'm so glad to hear you talk about biology, because that's something that I do on this program. And as I say, it's the biology stupid, because it's not just NPK, something that we've learned over the years, finally begun to understand that the biology in our soils is what is helping to keep our plants alive. And that's very, very important. I need to take a short break here, Albert, but we'll get back to Albert Bates, who's director of the Global Village Institute for Appropriate Technology. He's resident of the farm in Summertown, Tennessee, and the keynote speaker at Great Lakes Bioneer Chicago on the 2nd of November. And I have all the information for that on my website, MikeNovak.net. Go to this week's show, and I hope you'll sign up for the conference. Now, you've probably grown lilies before, but have you ever grown a species lily? D. Landreth Seed Company is proud to offer the species lily. Now, I hope I can pronounce this right. Lilium lichtlinii. I think that's it. Lichtlinii. Lilies are believed to be some of the oldest plants in cultivation. The Greeks and Romans were known to have cultivated them, but it's believed that earlier civilizations also grew lilies. Prior to the 16th century, only the Madonna lily was known to Europeans, and that was the lily that colonists brought to America in the 1630s. Thomas Jefferson was known to admire lilies, and at Monticello, he planted lilies from Greece. Lichtlinii was introduced in 1870 and was named for the 19th century botanist Max Lichtlin. It is actually a native of Japan. Anna Pavord, who's been on this program, in her great book, Bulb, which I have a copy of, and it's pretty awesome, she describes this plant perfectly when she says, "This is a very beautiful creature with a fine, strong black stems covered in equally fine, narrow leaves. It's a tall, prolific plant which does well in the garden and in a container. It's hardy from zone 3 to zone 7. Find out more about this historic bulb at LandrethSeeds.com or go to their Facebook page, Landreth Seed Co., or call 800-654-2407. D. Landreth Seed Company, purveyor of fine seeds since 1784.
Hi, this is Ron Calvio from Mighty House. Are you looking for a new ride? Looking for a cool ride? Looking for a ride that you can plug in so you can flip off the guy at the gas station? Well, here's your chance to get one for as little as $40. The Illinois Solar Energy Association is raffling off a 2014 Chevy Volt, and only 3,000 tickets will be sold. So how do you win? Go to illinoisolar.org and click on the link to the Chevy Volt raffle. You can buy one ticket for $40, two tickets for $60, or four tickets for $100. All raffle proceeds will fully benefit the Illinois Solar Energy Association, a nonprofit working to advance solar energy development throughout the state of Illinois. The winner will be drawn at the ISEA member meeting on December 7th, 2013. Again, that's illinoisolar.org to buy your tickets and to get all the small print details.
Alex? allergies acting up, trouble breathing, headaches, sinus pressure? You're tired, congested? Isn't it time to feel better? Breathe deeply and easily. Get rid of the symptoms that complicate your life. Dr. Bonnie Flaster is an acupuncturist and chiropractor who helps people get rid of allergies without using drugs, shots, or needles. Call Dr. Flaster at River North Wellness Center, 312-642-7545, or go to rivernorthwellness.com to find out how to get your body feeling better so you can enjoy life again.
And then your friendly announcer says, here's a tip from the Care of Trees. Forest trees usually thrive without the addition of fertilizer, which can give the erroneous impression that trees in general do not require it. However, while forest soils are rich in humus, which is organic matter that is replenished by the decay of plant residues, urban soils are usually very low in humus and nutrients because leaves in home landscapes are raked away. Bad people, stop doing that. Nature's recycling program for nutrients is interrupted. Ornamental trees and shrubs are also subjected to harsh and unfavorable soil and environmental conditions, so the need for fertilizer is even greater. The addition of fertilizer not only improves the appearance and condition of trees and shrubs, but it helps them to better withstand minor insect and disease problems, drought, and other stresses. Talk to a certified arborist at The Care of Trees about their soil care program and Davies Arbor Green Pro Fertilizer. Call 800-508-9466. And we're going to talk about this in the second part of the show today when Dan Krug is here from The Care of Trees. 800-508-9466 for a free consultation or go to thecareoftrees.com. The Care of Trees, a Davey company. Their business is people and their love for trees. You know, I absolutely had to play that as we're talking to Albert Bates, who will be doing the Saturday keynote at the Great Lakes Bioneer Chicago Conference coming up on the 1st, 2nd, and 3rd of November. Albert is on the 2nd, which is a Saturday at 9:30, and I hope you register for this amazing conference that Lisa and I are going to be part of. Albert, Lisa was looking at biochar. And she's fascinated by it. You know, during the break there, she was sort of hunting around on a search engine. And what would your question be, Lisa?
Well, so you may have said this. I was reading your blog. I'm reading and not listening to the radio show that I'm on. So then I ended up on Wikipedia looking at biochar. I'm not quite grasping. So how can I do this in my garden? And is it something that is, it seems as though it's something that is large scale that my farmer, or my uncle who's a farmer, can do as well? Can you?
Yeah, you know, we found that there's really two styles of agriculture that were practiced in the world before the East and West came together at the time of Christopher Columbus. And on the one side of the world, the Western civilization began out of Egypt and the Mesopotamian Fertile Crescent, and then up into northern China and northern Africa and so on. And that style was based on irrigation and the plow, and it left the carbon out. It took the carbon and took it out of the soil. So it went from having 20% carbon in soils down to 5% or less today, and it left deserts everywhere that you had intensive population growth. Well, in the other side of the world, the Americas, they actually developed civilizations and they put more carbon into the soil. So the soils became richer and richer and richer and more fertile, even in tropics where they'd not had glaciation in millions of years. So how did that happen? Well, it's actually about the biology. And so if you just put charcoal into your garden, it's not going to help it very much. It's not going to grow very fast. In fact, it may look worse the first year. And the reason is because it actually needs to have those little microbes, that bacteria and fungal part of it. It needs to have compost. So that biology, which goes well with the charcoal, needs to be put in first. And so I always put my charcoal directly into my compost pile and turn it in the compost and then put that in the garden. And then I get dramatic improvements in my vegetables.
But where do people get this biochar? Is this becoming readily available now?
It's a chicken and an egg kind of problem, because there are not a lot of manufacturers, because there's not a lot of demand for it yet. And yet, you know, how are you going to get that demand if you don't have it available in the garden store? So this is, there are a few brave entrepreneurs out there starting to produce it, and you're getting good compost mix, you know, with biochar mixed with worm castings. I highly recommend something like that. But the other way is just to start making it yourself. And in my book, The Biochar Solution, and in lots of different videos that are easily watched on YouTube, you can see people making charcoal in a variety of ways and then turning around and putting that into their garden or into their compost pile and then into their garden.
Well, we could go on for hours about this, and someday actually we should. But I want to give you a chance to preview your talk in the last couple of minutes here that we have, your talk called Cool Eco-Village Responses to Climate Change. What are you going to tell folks?
Well, a couple years back, the UN's Rapporteur on Human Rights started asking the hard question, what if food were a human right? What if we just had a treaty that was an international treaty and says everybody in the world has to eat? Can we actually allow that? Can we make that? Is that physically possible in this planet to do that? And his response was, yes, we can feed everyone. We can even feed a growing population, but we're going to have to change our methods of agriculture. We're going to have what he called eco-agriculture, but what he was really talking about was more of a permacultural designed organic no-till, you know, all that kind of, all those tools, right? And my friend Darren Doherty calls it regrarianism. It's going back to things that we knew as traditional societies, coming along now with modern tools and spreading organic knowledge around the world. And actually, you produce more. You produce about a third more food that way than you do from conventional modern agrochemistry or whatever. And so these techniques now, we can begin to think about having integrated energy systems, renewable energy systems. We can think about having houses that are built so that they're climate adaptive and use very little embodied energy and provide you all of your basic needs right there in your surroundings. We can begin to integrate these kinds of things the way that some experimental villages have around the world, the eco-villages. There's about 20,000 eco-village experiments in the world right now.
Can I ask you a question? How many residents, citizens of those eco-villages, what's the typical size of an eco-village?
Well, the typical size is only a few hundred. There are millions of people living in them now. In fact, there's more than a million people living in eco-villages just in Sri Lanka. In Senegal, they now have a ministry of eco-villages in the government that hopes to have 18,000 eco-villages by the end of this decade.
Wow. And you have hope that this, well, you know, again, getting back to Blake, that's, when Blake Davis was on the show, he said, ultimately, folks are going to find out that it works better when you have a couple of hundred people all, you know, working for the same thing. But that doesn't seem realistic, given the population centers we have in the world today.
Yeah, you know, if you look at the major population centers, that they all have their individual challenges. A lot of them are going to be challenged by where they're located, which were, created in times of a comfortable Holocene epoch when they were close to sea levels. Well, those are now rising, or close to rivers that got their water from melting ice from the snow every year, and that's changing. So all of these cities are going to be stressed. They're going to have difficult times. I mean, look at the lake. Look at what the lake levels are and the toxicity of the lake and things like that. And mm-hmm. You wonder what's the future for Chicago in that department. Mm-hmm. So these are issues that the major metropolitan areas are going to have. And if you look at the rural countryside, a lot of the problem that's been happening out there is sprawl, population growth, and also depletion of resources like soils, which are pretty critical to our future. So that's got to shift. All of those trends have to change. We have to have cities that are thinking green, that are becoming much more ecological in their outlook and planning, and we have to have rural areas that are putting fertility back into the landscape and creating more fertile examples, and I think that's actually what the strategy here is to find ways to make demonstrations, to make examples that others can emulate. And I think people learn that way much more from the carrot than from the stick. They see something they like and they emulate it.
You know, again, and here's an example of what you're talking about. You're talking about urban sprawl, and you know, and every day there's an example of the kinds of things you're talking about. I mentioned earlier the pet coke piles along the Calumet River, and we're going to talk next week to Tom Shepard from the Southeast Environmental Task Force about that, by the way.
Okay.
But this week, the Ileana Tollway received approval from the Metropolitan Planning Organization Policy Committee, which is a great disappointment because it's going to contribute to the urban sprawl if they can find the money for it. And, you know, it's going to be put on the backs of the taxpayers. You know that's going to happen. But it was something that folks have been fighting because they know the damage that just extending outward and outward and outward can do instead of coming back into the city and using the resources we have here. So, again, there's another example for you, Albert, when you do your talk about what's going on right here in this area that people can relate to.
Right, and you know, I've run into this problem of language. You know, we tend to villainize different kinds of toxic producers and so forth, and we tend to talk about climate change in terms like carbon negative or carbon minus or emissions reductions. And Bill Clinton used to say, nobody gets elected by promising people less. And so by focusing on the negative, we tend to not get a buy-in or adoption, early adoption of some of these things that are actually pretty good for us and help us out in a variety of ways. That's the whole nature of my language choice in when I start talking about cool and cool villages and cool cities and cool fuels and cool gardening is I'm trying to get something going here that's a more viral meme. It's you know, Japanese schoolgirls would like. You know?
Well, I got one for you. Biochar in every pot.
Yeah.
There we go. All right. That is Albert Bates. And if you want more information about him, his books, about his talk coming up at Great Lakes Bioneer Chicago, go to my website, MikeNovak.net. The conference is the 1st, 2nd, and 3rd at Roosevelt University, 430 South Michigan Avenue. You can sign up now. Go online right now and sign up. And I'm looking forward to meeting you, Albert.
I am too, Mike. I hope to see you there.
All right. Oh, you will. All right. Take care. Have a great Sunday.
Bye now.
It's the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. It's Dr. Wally's Tip of the Week, brought to you by Bertholdt's Garden Center in Elk Grove Village. Did your peach tree get blistered, ugly, red-orange leaves this spring? Peach leaf curl, also known as leaf curl, is a disease caused by a fungus and affects the blossoms, fruit, leaves, and shoots of peaches, ornamental flowering peaches, and nectarines, and it's one of the most common disease problems for backyard gardeners growing these trees. The good news is that peach leaf curl is one of the easiest fruit diseases to control. Leaf curl can normally be prevented with a timed application of Bonide's liquid copper fungicide, a natural garden product for organic gardening, and it's you do it in the spring before buds swell, but a second application is recommended in autumn after the leaves have fallen. That's why we're talking about it now. Before spraying, do a thorough cleanup and dispose of all leaves and debris. Spray the entire tree, evenly coating all branches and bark. And you can learn more from Dr. Wally himself at Bertholdt's Garden Center, 434 East Devon Avenue in Elk Grove Village, just west of O'Hare Airport. Look for the iconic windmill out front or go to Bertholdt's Garden Center, Bertholdts GardenCenter.com. Bertholdt's, get green, let's get growing.
Hi, my name is Peggy, and I publish Chicago's only local magazine dedicated to healthy and sustainable living. Natural Awakenings is available monthly, and we provide the latest news and trends about healthful living, including alternative and complementary medicine, fitness, good food and drink, healthy kids and families, and even healthy pets. Natural Awakenings also talks about local sustainability, gardening and environment, energy conservation, and green living. We feature local news and a calendar to help you stay connected. I can guarantee that each month you'll discover a new health tip, a tasty recipe, a service in your neighborhood, something that makes your life better. Natural Awakenings is free and available throughout the city and suburbs or online at nachicagonorth.com. Call us today at 847-858-3697 to learn more. That's 847-858-3697. Natural Awakenings. Feel good, live simply, laugh more.
Want to make a positive move in the housing market? Replace your siding and windows. You'll improve your home's look and energy efficiency, too.
Trust DR Services Unlimited, 847-998-1687 for your remodeling and energy needs. Siding, windows, solar and wind power, and more. Rated A-plus by the Better Business Bureau and recommended on Angie's List. DR is a proud member of NARI. DR provides exceptional quality at a fair price. Contact DR at 847-998-1687 or at RestoreTheNorthShore.com.
How high's the water, mama? 2 feet high and rising. How high's the water, papa? She said it's 2 feet high and rising. But we can make it to the road in a homemade boat, cause that's the only thing we got left that'll float. It's already over all the wheat and oats. 2 feet high and rising.
I had to play that for you, Rob, because I know you dealt with that in Colorado. Let's bring in Ricky D, because I don't know if you heard earlier in the show, Rick DeMaio, but Rob was part of that Colorado flood.
Yeah, and it sounds like he made it out okay, but still, when he experienced one of the worst floods in the history of the United States and probably the worst natural disaster in the state of Colorado since 1976, you're in some way, shape, or form a strange part of history, and I guess one that Rob doesn't want to, you know, revisit anytime soon.
Yeah, but you know, it puts everything in perspective, and you're grateful to for whatever you do have. It was kind of a reassuring experience in an odd way.
There you go, and then we're blaming Rick DeMaio for all of that, of course.
Well, you know, I was out in that area, Rob. I'm not too sure exactly where you were, but. I was with Rebecca in Boulder over July, in July rather, and we were up in an area called Inn at the Motel, or no, Motel at the Foot of the Mountain. It's right at the edge of Arapaho and Boulder Creek, and literally from our cabin you can see Boulder Creek, and that was the one tributary that basically flooded almost all of Boulder, and they've done an amazing job of actually mitigating further catastrophic floods by changing the floodplain downstream, so to say. But still, when you get 15 to 18 inches of water in 24 hours and 48 hours, there's not much you can do with that much water in that short of a period of time in that small of an area.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know what else to say about that. But, you know, it's speaking.
Other than wow.
Yeah, other than wow. But I say wow a lot on the show when you start talking weather and climate stuff.
Well, you know, Mike, you know, if you remember last week, we were talking about the tropical cyclone that was moving toward India.
Yeah, I was just going to bring that up because you and I talked about that. We went to the Microcosm event at Columbia College on Thursday, where Michelle Hoffman had her fundraiser, and that was really cool. And you started talking to me about the aftermath of it, and I was just amazed at the things you had to say about it. Do you remember what you told me?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, first off, if you take that same system and you put it in that same area back in 1999, 10 to 15,000 people died due to flooding, due to wind, due to heavy rain, mainly because the government didn't tell them about it. They didn't evacuate anybody. And now with the advent of, you know, social media, with cell phones, with better internet service in parts of India, which there still is not, you know, really even the most basic form of communication, and also obviously better weather forecasts, less than 50 people died because they evacuated 500,000 people along that coastline. And I kept asking my students during the course of the week, how many people have heard of Tropical Cyclone Phalen? And no one raised their hand. I go, that's a good thing, because that means it wasn't in the news because of the fact that it basically was a natural event that was obviously a disaster, but didn't become a catastrophe due to the fact that you had great weather information that was distributed to the people and the government actually took charge and evacuated people from the coastline. So sometimes the best weather stories are the ones that are not told. Obviously, you heard about Rob's description of what happened in Boulder, and we did as much as we could to get people out of the way. But what happened in India, I think, is one of the best stories of all of last week, which was obviously, you know, kind of buried in everything that was going on from the standpoint of the government shutdown.
And as you said to me, it's also possible that 80 or 60 years ago, 100,000 people would have died. I mean, it's just that we get better and better at this.
Yeah, and I think, Mike, you got to go back to 1970 when the typhoon or the tropical cyclone went into Bangladesh and nearly 300,000 people died. And then over the next couple of years, because so much of their water supply was polluted with salt water and marsh water, you literally had another 100,000 people die due to typhoid. And a lot of people don't remember this, but the concert for Bangladesh, which was put together by George Harrison and a couple of other musicians back then, that was the first time that musicians ever got together and did something for the help and aid of a foreign country. And people said, what are we doing here? We're coming to Madison Square Garden for 3 days, and some of the proceeds, at least all the proceeds, are going to help these people. That was the first one ever where we had actually a concert to help people, and hopefully we don't need to have any more of those. But yeah, good news all the way around as far as the typhoon, at least the tropical cyclone from last week.
And you said last week we would be talking about the cool weather, and we are. Yeah. I got a report from our buddy Pat Skatch, who had a couple of – he just had two instances of frost, two observations, one in Oak Brook and one in Roscoe, Illinois.
Yeah, this was basically a non-event. We had a lot of cloud cover come through the area, a little bit too much wind. Temperatures didn't get cool enough. But typically, and I sent you some information, frost, Mike, this time of the year usually happens about a week to about 10 days earlier than what it has happened. But I always say, really, the frost in October is really not too much of a big deal for most gardeners. Everything is basically out of the, from a standpoint of flowers. And if you do have anything in the garden, it's usually mums. So if the frost, the first frost of the year is not that big of a deal. The first freeze and the first hard freeze is. And we may see something like that around here on Tuesday. Beautiful day today with, you know, temperatures in the low to mid-60s, and this massive pool of cold air comes southward. The bulk of it is going to remain generally across Minnesota, Wisconsin, and Michigan. And there's actually a possibility for a couple of inches of snow north of the line from about Milwaukee to Madison up into Green Bay. Here, though, we'll get a lot of rain and wind during the day on Monday afternoon, with readings only in the mid-40s. And I think the better chance for a freeze, not even a frost, we're going to go straight to a freeze.
Wow.
Tuesday morning with temperatures only in the upper 20s. So we'll bypass the frost and go straight to a freeze, probably not a hard freeze. That's where you have temperatures generally below 28 degrees for about 4 hours. We're still a little bit of ways away from that. It's typically not until about the first week of November. But this is a rude awakening to us that the nice summer weather that we had in the first couple of weeks of October is basically gone.
Yikes. Well, I guess I have to harvest those tomatoes I got hanging on the vine, the last couple of tomatoes.
Yeah, that's probably not a bad idea. But, overall, Mike, real quick, you probably hear a little bit of noise in the background. I'm at a great restaurant called Chow Bella at 6806 North Sheridan. I'm having chai apple pancakes. Warm chai infused multigrain pancakes.
All right.
With rich brown sugar and cinnamon apples. You like that?
It sounds great. All right. Rick DeMille, we will talk to you next week. Enjoy your breakfast and news coming up.
This hour of the Mike Novak Show is brought to you by The Care of Trees, a Davey company. Their business is people and their love for trees. And by Recycled Granite, featuring eco-friendly split stone veneers and handmade products by individuals with disabilities. Go to recycledgranite.com. And by Birchold's Floral Gift and Garden Center. Get green, let's get growing. Here he is again, Mike Novak. My axe is cold. They said ship rides a trip to Ohio. Now it's a mighty long way down the dusty trail, and the sun bursts on the coast.
Yeah, nothing says Sunday morning in October like Mott the Hoople. Welcome to the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk. Before we get to our next guest, Wes King, I got an email that I think is, Lisa, you'll find this interesting and probably disturbing.
Uh-oh.
Everything we do.
Disturbing?
Everything we do these days seems to be disturbing. And I like the way that Albert Bates was talking about it. He's like, that was a great Bill Clinton quote.
Yeah.
That he said, you can't sell people on negative stuff. You got to give them something positive to hang on to.
Absolutely. And all of the work that I do, both with renewables and climate change, we try to improve the hope factor. You need to somehow balance motivation for change and hope that that change will bring us to a better place.
Which is why you don't want me in the room when you're talking about this.
Or Blake Davis.
But Blake, you know, it's funny about Blake, and I kept bringing him up, and when he sits here, he's usually smiling when he says those things.
I know.
The world's collapsing. Yeah.
When he mentioned that we needed a few billion less people on the planet, and he was smiling as he did it, my heart was just breaking.
I know. And actually, we got some hate mail about that when he said that.
But I think it's important, though, we do need to have that conversation, because we do need to understand that we are at an urgent place in civilization. And we have to take action. And so if we just gloss over it by only talking about the solutions, I think that we're missing part of the motivation and the message. And that is that it's bad and we have to do something right now, or though that could be our future. So I think we need to have that conversation, but we also have to temper it with hope.
So if you don't know what you're talking about, it's because you missed the first hour of the program, which was fascinating. And that podcast will be up. And I encourage everybody to listen to the podcast of the Mike Novak Show. Last week when we had Sandra Steingraber on, I put that up there. And, you know, I look at the metrics online, and the bandwidth went through the roof because people wanted to hear that conversation. And I assume they're going to want to do that with Albert Bates as well. And I encourage people to listen to podcasts and sign up for a podcast of the Mike Novak Show. It's free. Unlike Norman Goldman. It's free. Now, I do leave some commercials in there occasionally, actually for the whole show. But if I do, like with Albert Bates, I'll take the commercials out to do that particular thing. And you don't have to pay anything. All you have to do is have a computer and hook it up and have speakers on it. And you will get to hear the show anytime you want. And I know that a lot of folks do, and I'm grateful for that. You can also call me, 773-763-9278, anytime during the show. You know, that's kind of a standing invitation in this business. We're supposed to tell people, hey, call, you know, and they tell you that you're supposed to give out the phone number X number of times during a show. With me, I feel that's a standing invitation. You're always welcome to call. And if I can squeeze you into a conversation, I will do it. And when I have good calls, I try to do it the best I can. Now, of course, I have a lot of guests, and a lot of them are very, very interesting. And I also want to get out everything they have to say. But always feel free to call. Please do. Or
We did miss Dan from California.
And I'm sorry we weren't able to get him on, because he wanted to contribute to the discussion we had earlier about religion and how this can help our world environment. And the things we're trying, and the positive message that Lisa's trying to get out.
It was just tricky because we had such a new conversation with Albert. So
I know, and that
our
happens.
Apologies, Dan. Thank you so much for the effort.
And that's one of the things about the talk radio too, is there's a lag. People sit and they're listening and they're listening and they're listening and they go, wow, this is good. I need to get involved in this conversation. And by the time they dial, we've moved on to something else.
But I encourage you, if you are on Facebook, please give us your message on Facebook, and we'll continue the dialogue there.
Exactly. And I'm glad you said that, because I want to say Facebook and Twitter. Rob is posting on Twitter. In fact, if you're on Twitter, he posted a video of Albert Bates talking about biochar, which we were discussing in the first hour. And you know what? I have to have a biochar discussion that stands alone. It's too interesting a subject.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Getting back to this email that I got, a listener in Chicago wrote, Mike, check out this notice published by the Michigan DNR, that's Department of Natural Resources, in advance of the November deer season. Nothing to see here on an 11 countywide basis, Enbridge pipeline coming through. I mean, this is this is what the guy's writing. This is his message, and then I will read the message that came from the DNR. But my listener writes, nothing to see here on 11 countywide basis, Enbridge pipeline coming through. As somebody said, they're not even pretending to hide who's really in charge anymore. Thought you might be interested as a concerned guy and Michigan native, a devoted Chicago listener, and blank. Yes. I'm not going to out him here. So so it says, for me, press release for immediate release as of October 15th, contact Holly Vaughn or Ed Golder, Michigan DNR. Attention, hunters. Pipeline construction underway in southern Michigan. As hunters go into the field in southern Michigan this season, they should be aware that they may see some construction activity in the woods and should use caution. Enbridge is currently, by the way, Enbridge, the people whose pipeline leaked it into the Kalamazoo area, and those people are still displaced and probably will never be able to come back to their homes, you know, 3 years after the fact, that company. Enbridge is currently constructing segments of the Line 6B pipeline in Michigan. This work will continue during both small and big game hunting season. The Line 6B pipeline runs from Griffith, Indiana to Marysville, Michigan, and crosses 11 counties in Michigan. Berrien, Calhoun, Cass, Ingham, Jackson, Kalamazoo, Livingston, Macomb, Oakland. I grew up in Oakland County. I lived in Macomb County. So they're putting this under the, this is suburban Detroit. St. Clair and St. Joseph. That's suburban Detroit as well.
Unbelievable.
Hunters should avoid hunting near construction sites and are urged to use caution when driving near areas of pipeline construction. Hunters should also watch for flaggers, construction caution signs, slow traffic, and workers in these areas. The pipeline right-of-way is private property and should not be entered. More information about this Line 6B pipeline replacement project, including county-by-county maps, is available at enbridge.com. All right, wait, we want to get this out because you folks in Michigan are going to want to know this because I know we have listeners in Michigan. Enbridge.com/Line 6B Replacement Projects. Enbridge, and that's Enbridge.com/Line 6B Replacement Projects, or by calling 866-410-4356. Now, I know Lisa's writing this down, and so is Rob, and I got a feeling they're going to go look at these maps. And then this is the best part. At the end of this warning that these pipelines are going up and hunters stay away and please don't put any buckshot into a pipeline, The Michigan Department of Natural Resources is committed to the conservation, protection, management, use, and enjoyment of the state's natural and cultural resources for current and future generations. For more information, go to www.michigan.gov/DNR. And watch out for the oil spills. Thank you very much. Have a nice day. I added that last part. Yikes. So I want to thank my listener for that and find out whether the pipeline goes under my old home in Warren, Michigan. That's kind of what I want to know. All right. I need to go. Very quickly before I go to West King, let's go to Chris in Palatine. You're on the Mike Novak Show. Good morning, Chris.
Yes, Mike. Good morning. I'm kind of surprised you haven't spoken about the North Dakota farmer who has a pipeline running under his farm and woke up one morning to find 20,000 barrels of crude oil.
During the shutdown.
During the government shutdown. So there was very little that the government can do to help. Is that it?
Well, it took the, according to an article, by the way, in, believe it or not, Fox News, that it took the owners of the pipeline like 2 weeks to actually turn off the oil because they didn't believe their own sensors.
Because once again.
Again, right. and we talked about that last week with the Kalamazoo spill. The sensors, 16 alarms went off. 16 alarms that the Enbridge company had set up, and the workers ignored them because they thought they were air bubbles in the line.
And I think this should be a criminal activity. I mean, what is the point of having the alarms out there if these organizations organizations can just ignore the alarms with no penalty. Why is it a criminal violation?
Well, I would agree, but the other thing, though, is, you know, it mentioned that he cannot use these fields like within a half a mile radius because they're just totally polluted. It'll take them years to get the land where he can actually, you know, get back to farming again. Mm-hmm. But the shocking thing is this didn't make the national news.
Again.
You know, and you asked me why I didn't cover it. I got to tell you, Chris. There's so much to get to. If I talked about every single story, I would just, you know, I would just turn into a, I wouldn't have any conversations. It would just be news headlines for 2 hours about all those kinds of things happening. And I'm grateful to you that you brought it up.
Because I meant to post it on your Facebook page over the course of the week.
Well, a friend of mine posted it on my Facebook page, okay? And sometimes that's part of the problem.
Oh, was that
Chris?
You, Chris?
That was, I posted it to your Facebook page.
Oh, right. Was that you? Okay.
Yes,
all right. Well, great. See? And now, but you know what? Somebody else did as well.
Okay.
So I've had a couple of people. My friend Mac also put it up there. And it just goes on and on and on. And, you know, there's the one thing we know. If you build a pipeline, it will leak. At some point, it will leak.
Right.
That's probably about the only thing you can guarantee about a pipeline.
That would be a great motto. Build the pipeline and it will leak.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. You know, they'd be using that type of thing in advertising against you know, the XL pipeline that's coming in and that's going to destroy the aquifers up there in, you know, Nebraska.
But you know, that's the other thing we talked about, the one in that's going through Illinois and into Missouri last week, and I forget the name of it, and I should have it on the tip of my tongue, but I don't. The part of the problem is, as I read about this, the reason the XL gets all the publicity and gets all the press is because it's an international pipeline, because they have to, the State Department has to get involved with it. The ones in the country, not so much. We'll just build them because if it goes state to state, really most people aren't going to know about it, and we can get away with almost anything.
Well, and also just the extraction of the tar sands is one of the most polluting forms of oil that we're digging out of the ground right now. So there's a compound effect, not only of the of the pipeline, the size of it, but also the material that's coming from it as well.
Yeah, and meanwhile, our Congress is fighting over defunding Obamacare. Shame on you.
Get to work.
Really.
You were talking about the climate. I saw an article in a right-wing publication called the National Examiner talking about the end of, climate change extremism. In fact, the title says, "The Age of Climate Alarmism is Coming to an End."
Oh, really?
Yeah, this is from the Washington Examiner, which is a right-wing publication.
Well, really, they wish. It's just, you know, folks are just going to continue to talk.
That is the enemy, and that's the mindset we're going up against.
Well, the mind, we could get into that mindset, and I really don't want to at the moment, but it is dangerous, and it's we have to continue to be positive and say, no, you can really have clean energy, as Lisa says all the time, it's here. Why are we messing with this other stuff that's going to spill in your backyard? Let's move on. Let's move forward. And that's what Albert Bates is talking about, those kinds of things. So, Chris, I appreciate you bringing me up to...
Thank you very much, Mike. Great show, as always.
Thanks for calling. I appreciate that. The Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. Belatedly, we go to Wes King. Wes, he's still there.
Yeah, I'm still here.
Yeah, you see what's going on in the world? It's kind of hard to keep track of everything. And it's such a good segue to you because... You're talking about something else that has really been hard to keep track of, and that's two items, actually. The Farm Bill, which has been delayed now for over a year, and it keeps getting pushed back and having, you know, they put Band-Aids on it and move it forward so that we can, you know, continue to have any kind of farm program in the country. And the other, of course... is the Food Safety and Modernization Act. And what could, you know, we talked earlier about that. Gosh, what could possibly go wrong? The Food Safety Modernization Act. It sounds like it should be a good thing for all of us. Let's start with the Farm Bill, though. All right. Where do we stand? We actually had some movement on it while the government was shut down, right?
Yeah, surprisingly, things are, for the first time in maybe a year, it looks like there's a path forward to actually get a full five-year farm bill out of Congress. While the government shutdown was going on, last Saturday, actually, the House of Representatives actually got some things done. They voted to send their version of the farm bill, which has got astronomical cuts to SNAP, some good parts, but a lot of bad, too. They voted to send that to conference with the Senate. This is the first time this has happened since this process started well over 2 years ago.
Oh, my goodness. And of course, what they tried to do in the middle of the year was separate SNAP from the rest of the farm bill. And, of course, that crashed and burned, right?
Well, first, they actually tried to pass their own farm bill, full farm bill, with these huge SNAP cuts, as well as some work requirements related to SNAP and food stamps. And that surprisingly, the House leadership was really embarrassed because it failed on the floor of the House. So they had to then split the food and nutrition part from the traditional farm program part and pass each one of them separately. And then they later took a vote to attach the two back together. So what we have going to conference committee with the Senate is their two halves put back together.
Okay, and now they're saying, we will actually talk. We actually are going to go to conference and have a discussion about this. Now, that's good and it's bad. It's good because they're finally talking. It's bad because do you really expect them to come to some sort of compromise? You know, the Senate passed their farm bill a while ago, and doing enough harm with $4 billion in cuts to the SNAP program, but the House wants $40 billion. Here's what I fear is that the Democrats will now say, oh, well, let's compromise and we'll make it $10 billion. Do you see something like that happening?
You know, that's what people anticipate. You know, all along, I think there's been an anticipation that the final number in terms of funding between the House and the Senate would be, you know, it would be somewhere in the middle. It wouldn't be as draconian as the House, but it wouldn't be as small as the Senate. But the fear now is that because the House is so far away from the Senate, they're not going to be able to get to compromise. And especially considering one of the members that the House leadership named to this conference committee is Representative Sutherland from Florida, and he's kind of the one who's credited with tanking the farm bill in the House in the first place, because he's the one who championed these amendments to attach work requirements to getting SNAP benefits. So he's considered to be the one on the committee who's there to hold the line on SNAP cuts, while on the other side, the Democrats have Representative Marcia Fudge from Ohio, whose her job is to hold the line on as small cuts as possible. So they're coming into this with two different goals. So it's really, yeah, it's a question. It's great they're talking, but will they actually be able to put something together?
I realize that I neglected to properly introduce you. This is Wes King, Executive Director of the Illinois Stewardship Alliance. You can go to www.ilstewards.org. What is good that might come out of the bill, especially what was passed by the Senate?
Yeah, so the overall kind of the silver lining in the hope that you can find elements in both the House and the Senate, but really mostly in the Senate, is there are some actual historic reforms to some of the commodity programs. For a long time, people have, you know, criticized the Farm Bill for giving subsidies to you know, wealthy farmers who don't need it. You know, direct payments have been a program that have basically been given to farmers whether or not they're, you know, whether or not they need them or not. So direct payments, they're going bye-bye. There's also provisions in the Senate Farm Bill for the first time ever to say that, you know, if you get crop insurance and you're wealthy, the government's not going to subsidize it as much as they have.
Even though it's probably not as much as we would prefer to see that cut, right?
Yeah, absolutely. This was kind of the, we have our own senior senator Dick Durbin to thank for him. This was one of these really interesting bipartisan. Durbin and Tom Coburn of Oklahoma pushed this through. But yeah, like you said, it's probably not as much as we really need in terms of a cap or elimination of subsidies for wealthy farmers. But it is, it's a historic step in the right direction.
Well, it seems to me that you know, instead of subsidies, the crop insurance seems like a fairer way to go. Would you agree with that?
It is, if done correctly. I would agree with that. But, you know, there's a lot of problems with crop insurance. You know, one of the things that some people on the more progressive side of agriculture are a little weary of, that while we're cutting direct payments, we're reducing subsidies for crop insurance to wealthy farmers, we're also creating a new form of crop insurance in this farm bill called revenue insurance. There's always been revenue insurance, so farmers can get insurance against not producing, you know, not getting as much money as they want. And this has been something they could do on their own, but this farm bill creates for the first time a federally subsidized revenue insurance program.
Hmm. All right, and
it's good and bad. It's
well, you know, yeah, we don't. The progressives would like to see wholesale change, but as you know, these things come in increments. And some of the stuff that I've become aware of is some of the innovative programs, including fruit and vegetable, organic, renewable energy, livestock, minority and beginning farmers, sustainable food systems, rural job creation, and the next generation of farmers. There are chances for some of these programs to at least get a look-see. But if the two houses of Congress don't come together, some of those could fall by the way. Is that right?
Yeah, that is right. And what's the saddest part about this is all, you know, these programs addressing those issues you mentioned, they've kind of been left. They're what we're calling stranded programs. They've been unfunded and unauthorized, essentially, since the last farm bill fell apart in 2012, since it expired. When Congress passed these extensions to the old farm bill, they left all these programs out. So I thought it was really interesting, you know, that your guests previously, you were talking about climate, renewable energy issues. We used to have a really great program, Rural Energy for America program, through the farm bill. Not, you know, it's provided a lot of loan guarantees and matching grants for farmers to put in solar panels, small-scale wind, and other renewable projects on their farm. Well, none of those have gone forward since last year, as well as programs to support beginning farmers or farmers markets, all because Congress decided to not include them in the extension of the farm bill, because these are the new innovative programs. They wanted to only extend the core programs, and they left all these out. And these are the programs that we really need, because they're the ones that are driving the future of agriculture.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, and that's the real danger of government gridlock, is that a farm bill gets stalled a year ago, they pass an emergency measure, but of course the emergency measure, as you said, just covers the core and not all of the innovative programs that could potentially benefit small farmers and renewable energy. And then we get to the crunch time and these things get left out, and it's all part of the plan of the obstructionists. That's the cynical thing about it. Yeah, it's like, slow the process down. In fact, grind it to a halt, and then we'll go, oh my God, we're at the last second. Well, we can't possibly pass these things because we can't agree on it. So let's just pass
the
core.
Minimal amount that we can possibly do.
Do you see that, Wes King?
You know, I don't know for sure, but it's hard to make an argument against that. It you know, the evidence seems to suggest that's what's going on. You know, I haven't been on a fly on the wall in these conversations, so I don't know for sure, but it's hard to not look at the situation and come away with that conclusion.
All right. So at least there's movement on the farm bill. I'm not holding my breath that we're going to have the most wonderful outcome. But let's be positive here, because that's the theme of today's show, is be as positive as possible. A biochar in every pot is what I'm saying. And let's go to the Food Safety Modernization Act. Okay, this was passed in 2010. I mean, that's the other thing. This is law, and it was signed in early 2011. But we're still in the comments period. But that's going to end what, November 15th?
Yeah. So the Food Safety Modernization Act, huge piece of legislation, historic. This is the first major overhaul to the nation's food safety system since the Upton Sinclair days. You know, we're talking 70 plus years since we've really done a major upgrade to our food safety system.
Well, that sounds like a good thing because things have changed dramatically in 70 years. Why are people frustrated with this process? And what are from what I understand, part of it is that the FDA is now involved as well, right?
Yeah, that's from a small farm, sustainable agriculture perspective. The real worry is that the FDA, for the first time in history, is going to be regulating the growth, packaging, and distribution of fresh fruits and vegetables on farms. So we're talking about this is they're stepping into a totally whole new area for them, and that's regulating farm production. And through this Food Safety Modernization Act, they've released a couple proposed rules or regulations. That's what's in a comment period right now. And one of those is proposed produce rule, which is all about, okay, you know, the regulations on what kind of water you use, what kind of soil amendments you use, how you package things, how you distribute things from your farm. And this is really the first time FDA's stepped into the farm world. And a lot of people, especially on the more innovative, cutting edge side of things in the world of direct farm sales, local food systems, organic agriculture, people are really worried because based on this proposed rule the FDA's released, it kind of seems that they don't know really what they're doing. They don't have much experience with farms seen in their regulations.
It sounds like part of the problem is a cookie cutter approach to big farms and little farms. I mean, there's an article that the National Sustainable Agriculture Coalition writes, and it's called Top 10 Reasons for Farmers, Consumers, and Organizations to Weigh In on Proposed Safety Food Regulations. And a couple of them are just mind-boggling. Like, for instance, the new rules would make it nearly impossible to use natural fertilizers like manure and compost. According to them, this is what they say, but it says the proposed rule standards for using manure and compost would make it effectively impossible for farmers to use manure and would create barriers to the use of compost. How would that happen?
Yeah, so a lot of that's really focused on these proposed rules are in direct conflict with the National Organic Program. So the National Organic Program, to be certified organic, there's certain rules you can follow relative to how you use compost and manure. And one of the big ones farmers are worried about is this new rule says that if you're going to apply manure to your field, and this, be clear, this doesn't apply to synthetic fertilizers, only biological fertilizers. So if you're going to apply manure to your field, you have to wait 9 months between the application period and harvesting. This is just unworkable. This is totally, you know, this goes against what the standards are for operating a farm. When you're going to use manure, you can't wait that long.
No.
It's just not possible. And it's in direct conflict with the organic program.
And it is. And there are others. And you need to look at that. Go to my website, MikeNovak.net, and you can see some of those. Before I let you go, I'm going to take a quick phone call. Can you handle that, Wes?
Sure, yeah.
All right. Let's go to Bob from Plainfield. Bob, you're on the Mike Novak Show. Good morning.
Hi. You know, one of the I agree with almost everything your guest has been saying. But the one thing he's left out is the CR provision of this farm bill, which I believe is a major hang-up in Congress. And the CR provision stands for conservation restoration, which takes farmland out of production and allows for habitat for wildlife It also removed huge amounts of what he indicated was artificial fertilization, which goes into our water supply. And I believe that's where there's a major hang-up is the CR provision. I mean, over the last 20 years or so, we've had, I think it's close to 300 million acres in our CR plan. That is being dramatically cut since they have yet, or since the last go-around for this new farm bill. And CR, I mean, you have to admit, you know, it's important to take, you know, farmland out for our water supply and for our natural habitat.
And the soil needs to rest sometimes.
Exactly.
That's a really good point, Bob. Wes King, do you want to address that?
Yeah, I would just say the program he's talking about is the Conservation Reserve Program, CRP. You know, and if any of your listeners have ever hunted before, most likely they've hunted on CRP land. But he's right. You know, one of the problems that, you know, I didn't mention is that conservation, not just CRP, but other programs like the Conservation Stewardship Program, which gives basically incentives or green payments to sustainable farmers. These are all being cut. These are all when people want to cut programs, they go to look to the.
Oh yeah, conservation goes first. It's always the first thing out. Let me ask you. I'm sorry to interrupt, Wes, but is the conservation part of this bill in the Senate passed bill? Is it still there?
Yes, both. You know, the programs still exist in both bills. They just, you know, as with a lot of these things, the Senate cuts them, but it cuts them far less than the House.
Yeah, this is,
you know, unfortunately,
this,
we're talking about cuts on both sides,
always,
as opposed to increased funding. Which really, you know, if we're going to address things like climate change adaption, we need to be investing more money in sustainable agriculture and conservation programs, not less.
Yeah, Bob, that's a great point. I'm so glad you brought that up because we did miss that. Excellent part of the conversation.
Thanks for taking my call, young man.
Okay. Have a great day. Wow. I haven't been called young man in a long time. Wes.
He was talking about me.
Oh, I think he was, because you are a young man. That is Wes King, who is the executive director of the Illinois Stewardship Alliance. As we wrap up here, what would you advise people to do?
It's always reach out to your congressman, let them know what's important. And then with the Food Safety Modernization Act, because it's not a Congress thing, get on our website, ilstewards.org or sustainableagriculture.net, and read more. This really is an opportunity for people who eat and buy local and care about organic and sustainable agriculture to submit comments to the federal government to say, hey, you know, one size fits all rules doesn't cut it. Protect biological, organic, and sustainable farming.
And I will repeat those websites, and we will post them on Twitter and Facebook. Go to ilstewards.org so you can have a say in your food and local food, because this is very, very important to local food, or sustainableagriculture.net. Wes, you're going to keep me apprised, I'm sure, of all of this as it moves forward, and I look forward to having you back on the show and talking some more.
Sounds good. Thanks for having me again.
All right. Take care. Have a great Sunday.
You too. Bye.
It's the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. See, we're solving the problems of the world every single day. And there's a guy in the studio right now, Dan Krug. Is that how you pronounce your last name?
Yeah, that's right, Mike.
Who's, I assume you're a certified arborist.
I certainly am.
Yeah, with the Care of Trees, a Davey company, and a great sponsor of the Mike Novak Show. Well, you know, we gotta let folks know, but I'm not ashamed of that at all. I love having my sponsors on, especially when they give good information. So, you folks with your tree questions, 773-763-9278, 773-763-9278. You can talk to Dan, and but specifically today, in just a second, we're going to talk about Davies Soil Care and Arbor Green Pro. And he's just champing at the bit to get that information out, because it's about keeping trees healthy. And actually, I am so glad that we are talking about this, Dan, because I have very strong opinions about fertilization. Mm-hmm. I think that people over-fertilize sometimes.
No doubt.
Yeah. And I think that they look to fertilization as the answer to everything. They see something in decline, and their first question is, should I fertilize? And my answer is, well, you really haven't examined your plant yet, have you?
Yeah, that's really the key thing. Now, sometimes fertilization can really help out. And usually it's a combination of things if your tree is declining, which will help long term.
Sure. Yeah. All right. And we will discuss this in just a second. Now, are you wondering what you can do now to make your lawn healthier next spring? We're getting right to the end. You know what? I haven't mowed my lawn yet in a while, but it looks lovely. It's green. It's very happy. It likes the cool weather. It likes a little bit of rain. This is what lawns do. And I only have a tiny little bit in my backyard, but I have to get out and chop it before the end of the season. But if you want to make it healthier for next year, think Milorganite. Now that the weather has cooled, your lawn has an opportunity to build back its root system, but it needs extra nourishment. Speaking of fertilizer, see, lawns, they're feeders. Although, you know, you can, there's a lot of ways to do that, but, folks think about doing work on their lawns, unfortunately, they think spring. But experts know that the fall is the best time to prepare your lawn for the coming season. And if you're looking for something organic, pick up Milorganite. Milorganite feeds your lawn slowly through the fall, providing more green color with fewer clippings or less clippings. I guess it's actually less clippings and maximum recovery for summer stress. It's a trick golf course superintendents have used for decades. Milorganite applied now will help your lawn green up faster in spring while helping it recover quickly from winter damage. You'll improve your lawn's overall health and greatly reduce weed problems. So give your lawn the food it needs, Milorganite, for better results naturally. Visit Milorganite.com for a garden center near you.
Hi, this is Ron Calvio from Mighty House. Are you looking for a new ride? Looking for a cool ride? Looking for a ride that you can plug in so you can flip off the guy at the gas station? Well, here's your chance to get one for as little as $40. The Illinois Solar Energy Association is raffling off a 2014 Chevy Volt, and only 3,000 tickets will be sold. So how do you win? Go to illinoisolar.org and click on the link to the Chevy Volt raffle. You can buy one ticket for $40, two tickets for $60, or four tickets for $100. All raffle proceeds will fully benefit the Illinois Solar Energy Association, a nonprofit working to advance solar energy development throughout the state of Illinois. The winner will be drawn at the ISEA member meeting on December 7th, 2013. Again, that's illinoisolar.org to buy your tickets and to get all the small print details.
Is pain keeping you from enjoying gardening? Dr. Bonnie Flaster at River North Wellness Center has gentle and effective techniques to get you out of pain and back to doing what you love. Here are two quick tips. First, remember to stretch. Second, use a timer to make sure you take breaks. Come see her at River North Wellness Center and find more tips at rivernorthwellness.com or call 312-642-7545 to make an appointment with Dr. Flaster and get back to feeling good.
Just need to let you know, Lisa, I have my tickets.
You do?
I have my, yep, to the ISEA. I'm going to win the Chevy Volt.
Excellent. Because Solar Power International is this week, so we've got the booth all set up, and the car is gorgeous.
Is it real? What color?
The owner gets to pick their own.
Woo!
But the one that we have in the booth is like a charcoal black, and all of the union guys at McCormick Place were drooling over this car.
I'm going to win it.
It's a gorgeous car. Mm-hmm. And then you, Ron Calgo from Mighty House is kicking in the like, little extra, and Bosch has donated the charger. So sweet deal.
Ron will install the charger wherever you have it.
If you're within a 50-mile radius of listening to his show, which is on Saturday mornings from 8 until 11 here on WCPT.
Nice plug for Ron Cowgill and Mighty House. Now, maybe I wasn't paying attention or something, but geez, when did it get so cold? Now, that's not exactly the kind of question that you should send to Chicagoland Gardening Magazine, but the Q&A section in front of the magazine, Adele Klein is always ready to answer tough questions. For instance, in the September-October issue, there are questions about getting rid of fusarium and verticillium wilt in your soil. Okay, Dan? I would say my hint is it ain't easy.
Yeah, no. No, verticillium is one of those things that you're not going to get out very, very simply.
I know. It's killed two of my trees already.
Try planting something else.
I am. No. I mean, I'm going to plant something that's resistant to verticillium wilt next time. The column also is about how to deal with the juglone released by a neighbor's black walnut tree roots that have reached into the yard. That's another problem, isn't it?
Allelopathic chemicals are actually one of my favorite things about trees.
Allelopathic chemicals?
Yeah,
and allelopathic means?
It's essentially chemical warfare between trees, and they prevent other trees from developing their roots and growing underneath them.
Then it also deals with what can be planted under a maple tree. And my hint on that is think mulch, a small sitting bench, and some shade plants in a container.
Maybe some hostas. That could work.
Yeah, and they say coral bells might survive under there. It's tough. There's also the Ask the Experts column, which answers the question, what are some perennials that benefit by being divided in the fall? But if you read that one, remember that we're getting to the end of October. Then there's my column on the inside back page. We've asked the experts about it, but all they do is shrug and walk away. Get a subscription to Chicagoland Gardening Magazine. Go to chicagolandgardening.com or call 888-265-3600. 888-265-3600. That voice you heard commenting, kibitzing here on this commercial, is Dan Krug from The Care of Trees. He's a certified arborist, and we're here to talk about soil a little bit. And again, 773-763-9278 if you've got a question. Sean Kingzett, who's a buddy of mine and works for Davey as well and has been on the show many times, likes to say that there's no such thing as native soil in the Chicago area because everything is so disturbed and it's been worked over so much.
Right, right.
So that's what you're dealing with when people have trees in this area.
Yeah, the nutrients in the soil has completely been stripped away.
Yeah.
If you look at new developments out in the western suburbs now, they take all the beautiful topsoil away that used to be farmland and strip it down to the clay so they can put in the foundations, and they put plants in this clay. Well, it's not going to grow very well.
Yeah, like they slam sod on top of it,
right.
And people wonder why the sod fails because it's got no place to go. Hello, you can turn on your mic. Thank you.
Why don't they bring the topsoil back?
Well, they do.
They do. They sell it back to you, and they sell a little bit of it. You know, they strip off 6 inches, and they sell you back two.
Two, yeah. And it's been sitting in a gigantic pile. It cooks in the sun, and all of the biology is
dead.
Gone.
It bakes out.
You know, and I don't know why we don't pass laws against that.
Yeah.
Why? It just seems insane. And I know why. Because we can't solve all kinds of other problems. Like we don't have the energy. What's that thing? The
RPS.
RPS. We don't have that. And we don't have pension reform. And so the idea of – but this seems like a no-brainer. It's like ban these developers from stripping off the topsoil. Mm-hmm. That's it. End of story.
Yeah. Yeah. But the problem is when you start getting into things like construction, before you even strip off the topsoil afterwards, there's still compaction.
Yes.
So the compaction is a lot of times one of the other bad things that happens.
So you've got this soil. So the first thing you should do is improve your soil.
Right.
Okay. What do you recommend? I mean, you talk – Davey has a soil care program that the Care of Trees uses. What does that involve?
Well, there's two basic things to the soil – a soil care program in general. You've got – more organic style treatments, which is improving the pore space in the soil, the physical component of the soil. You have the mineral and also the biological component. And
sure.
That's what an organic
remember
soil
I said earlier
program.
In the show, it's the biology, stupid.
It is.
Yeah.
And that's exactly it. You have those three components for a soil care program. And if you improve all three of those in unison, you have better long-term health. Now, the other option is also fertilization.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, more of a, remediation and helping something that's damaged that necessarily organic treatment can't help quickly. And a lot of people think, I want this taken care of immediately. But when you think about trees, trees are long-term.
Yeah, because they're huge mostly.
Yeah.
They're big plants. And then that leads to other problems. People think a tree cannot be harmed because it's so big. What can you do to disturb a tree? But lots.
Mm-hmm. And it all has to do with soil and the root structure.
Right.
Those are the biggest things.
So, and I'm glad you say this, that your preference would be long-term remediation mm-hmm. of the soil. It's right. like do it every year. Keep adding mulch. And if you can, compost. Try to deal with the compaction if you possibly can. But if you've got compacted soil around tree roots, isn't that difficult to deal with? How do you fix that?
It's very difficult. We can physically excavate the soil, open up pore space to allow water and to percolate easier for root development to grow into those larger pore space areas using a tool called an air knife to open up that area. And sometimes you can even bring in new soil, you know, compost-rich soil to remediate that. That's a little bit more difficult to do,
mm-hmm.
but definitely possible in some applications.
All right, let me ask you a question here, because a lot of people think that, I know, I'll fix my tree. I'll just put 6 inches of really good soil at the base of the tree.
Mm. No.
Why is that a bad idea?
Well, the stems of trees are meant to be dry. And if you put in a planter box and just incorporate new soil on top of it, you're going to encourage decay and moisture at the base of the tree.
You're talking about the trunk.
Right, on the trunk of the
right.
tree. And girdling roots and things like that can start coming off of the main stem and strangling a tree. So you can have a large tree that strangles itself or starts to decay at the base.
If you're building up soil around the base of the tree.
Right, above ground level.
Right. Okay, so what if you decide, I know, I'll put 6 inches of soil on top of the roots of my big tree, but I won't pile it up against the trunk. Would that work?
No. The three biggest components of soil and importance for roots system of a tree are air, water, and nutrients.
Mm-hmm.
So if we're adding more soil on top of that, we're actually reducing the air component by compacting, you know, that 6 inches of soil will eventually compact down and crush the root system, and those roots will have
to. So those roots are still vulnerable, and people, I think, they look at a tree and they say, well, those are really big, tough roots. How can I harm that by putting some soil on it? Mm-hmm. But you can't.
Yeah, you definitely can't.
All right, so we get to the point where the slow remediation is a good idea, but you need a jump start. Is that where we're talking about Arbor Green Pro?
Yeah, realistically, Arbor Green Pro is a slow-release fertilizer that's been developed for trees. Now, a lot of people, as you were saying before, with turf grass, a lot of people just end up fertilizing, over-fertilizing their grass. What's great about Arbor Green Pro is it's not high in saline content, so over application doesn't burn anything if that were possible.
Let's differentiate here, because you're talking about salts in fertilizers, mm-hmm. but basically we're talking synthetic fertilizers when we're talking salts.
Right, that's true.
So people who like the blue stuff, that's what I call it, but it's not always blue when it's in the bag like that. But you're right. They'll go nuts on their lawns, mm-hmm. but not necessarily their trees.
Right. And tree fertilizer and turf fertilizer are really two different things.
What would you say is the difference?
Well, the nutrient component itself, you know, when we're looking at, for example, synthetic fertilizers, the NPK, the
nitrogen, phosphorus, potassium. Right.
The difference between the turf fertilizers and the tree fertilizers are just those the breakdown of the chemicals or the minerals in there, and the trees they need a little bit more of the nitrogen aspect, and in a slower release form,
mm-hmm.
it you know, through organic and micronutrient activity, you can have a greater benefit throughout the season.
Let's take a quick phone call. We're talking to Dan Krug from the Care of Trees, Davey Company. If you want more information, obviously, you can always call 800-508-9466 or go to thecareoftrees.com. Sarah, you're on the Mike Novak Show. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you today?
Good.
I had called because we recently purchased our home last year, and we have probably 8 to 10 very, very large old oak trees, and they are not faring so well. I know it's been dry the last 2 years, so I'm sure they're not happy about that. But the previous owners, while they didn't do a whole lot as far as care, they were getting them injection fertilization, and I'm just trying to figure out if there's a better way to make these trees a little bit healthier, or if they're kind of a lost cause and I need to look at something else.
Well, don't they look healthy?
Not really. Half, maybe they're maybe 50% healthy. They have a lot of chlorosis. They're just kind of, the leaves are dry. I mean, it started probably in about July. You really noticed it ticking up.
Well, these wouldn't happen to be pin oaks, would they?
I have some pin oaks, and I'm guessing, and there's a couple other ones that are not pin oaks, but they're also just not looking that great.
And where do you live?
I live in Mundelein.
Okay. Oh.
Well, Sarah, the biggest thing is having a certified arborist come out and inspect the trees first, because then, you know, someone like myself would be able to better identify what's going on. And, you know, even with the history you have that there had been a soil injection done to improve the trees, sometimes things can be missed. And, you know, there could be other things like boring insects and disease issues other than soil related problems.
I think insects are interesting. I do not think they're boring.
Not that kind of boring.
Oh, sorry. I misunderstood. Okay.
Oh, a little entomology humor there. Yeah.
I think he deserved a ba-dum-bum.
Oh, okay. There we go.
Perfect. Right. Just perfect.
but I think Dan's right, Sarah, that you can look at something and see one thing, but a certified arborist comes out and sees something completely different.
Sure.
Yeah. I mean, we have a lot of times when someone asks me to come out to their property and they tell me what's going on, and I look at it and I said, yes, that is going on, but you also have X, Y, and Z happening at the same time.
And the good news is, Sarah, that the Care of Trees will do this for free.
We offer free consultations, and we work throughout the entire Chicago area.
Here's what I want you to do, Sarah, is call 800-508-9466. Give them a call, and when you call, say, you heard it on the Mike Novak Show.
Will do.
So, I think that, you know, Dan's point is well taken. There's probably things you can do. Pin oaks don't necessarily do as well in this area as other oaks.
That's true. And it's unfortunate because pin oaks are very fast growing oak trees.
Yeah.
But the soil, the trees have a hard time developing in the soil at times. So we have chlorosis issues, and that can be remediated, but it's not always an easy thing to do.
But at the very least, call that number. They'll come out. They'll give you a free consultation, and at least you'll know how to proceed at that point.
Wonderful. Thank you very much for the information. I appreciate it.
All right. Thanks for calling, Sarah. Have a great Sunday.
Thank you.
Thanks, bye.
And Dan, we're just about out of time here. I know it goes very fast, doesn't it?
It does go fast.
And anything that I missed about the soil care program that you want to get out?
Well, the most important thing is being aware of what kind of soil you have. You can have tests done to determine what kind of nutrients are devoid in your soil and what can be done to better help your trees and shrubs. Mm-hmm. And these are all things that we can provide for interested parties. And, you know, a lot of times it's really just the soil care program, getting on that, improving the soil for your trees.
Dan Krug from the Care of Trees, 800-508-9466 or thecareoftrees.com. And I hope we see each other again soon.
Sounds very good. Thanks, Mike.
Spending more time at home these days? Give yourself some room. Renovate your basement or attic. You'll increase your living space and your home's resale value, too.
Trust DR Services Unlimited, 847-998-1687 for your remodeling needs, including additions, renovations, and other home improvements. Rated A-plus by the Better Business Bureau and recommended on Angie's List. DR is a proud member of NARI. DR provides exceptional quality at a fair price. Contact DR at 847-998-1687 or at RestoreTheNorthShore.com.
Bertolt's Garden Center Center in Elk Grove Village wants you to know that their fall clearance sale is going strong, and you're going to find goodies for your home indoors and out at terrific prices. We're getting to the end of the planting season, so you want to take advantage of these offers. Trees and shrubs, 50% off. Rose bushes, ground covers, and perennials, 50% off. Fruit trees and berries, you guessed it, 50% off. Select flowering tropical plants are 75% off. Citrus trees, 75% off. Select statuary, 50% off. And last but not least, gift shop Halloween items, 25% off. And that's before Halloween. You can still get mums, pansies, accent plants, plus a variety of pumpkins, unique gourds, corn stalks, and straw. So stop by Bertold's Garden Center, 434 East Devon Avenue in Elk Grove Village, just west of O'Hare Airport. Look for the iconic windmill out front or go to bertoltsgardencenter.com. Bertolt's, get green, let's get growing. Lisa, you got a minute here, okay?
Thank you so much. You know, there's an exciting event happening this week starting on October 22nd at 11 Western Time, so Pacific Standard Time. The Climate Reality Project will be airing 24 hours of climate reality. If you go to the number 24hoursofreality.org, you'll be able to tune in and see firsthand live broadcast regarding issues that are facing Europe, facing South Africa, facing Australia, and really understanding the global impact of climate when it comes to health, when it comes to food, pesticides, water, you name it. So it's a great resource, and that's 24hoursofreality.org. Starting October 22nd, tune in anytime.
Wow. Okay, Rob, I've got your theme here. I hope you appreciate that.
Oh, yeah, theme.
Yeah, there we are. Thanks all for listening. And give that website one more time, Lisa.
24hoursofreality.org.
All right.
All right. Quicker.
Go home.
No, I was going to say go green. Or
go home.